Hey friends, it's Rich from Unseminary, and I want to just take a moment to again encourage you to check out Design Pickle. We've talked about them in the past. They provide a flat rate, always available, ego-free, unlimited graphic design help. They've been doing it for tons of churches across the country. It's really simple. You pay one flat rate fee every month, and you can send them as much graphic design work as you want. They do all our work at Unseminary. I love them dearly. Russ, who's the owner over there, is a great guy. You really should check them out. designpickle.com/churches. Check them out.
Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Well, hey everybody, welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. We're so glad that you've decided to tune in. I'm really excited about today's podcast. We're talking about Relevant Church. This is one of the fastest growing churches located in the country. It's located in Locust Grove, Georgia. It's founded in 2010. Today we've got Mark Einerson with us. He's the operations pastor, really focusing on administration, systems, budgets, all the fun stuff that we love to talk about here at Unseminary. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rich. Glad to be here today.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you've taken some time out from busy fall to help us out. I wonder if we could start with kind of giving us a sense of the church. Tell us a little bit about Relevant. If people were to come this weekend, what would they experience? Maybe a little bit of the history, that sort of thing.
Sure. Relevant was, as you mentioned, was founded in 2010. We are about 45 minutes straight south of downtown Atlanta, so a suburb of the Atlanta community, more like a bedroom community, I guess. The community that we are in has experienced some pretty explosive growth in the early 2000s. Went from, I lived in this area back in the mid-90s, probably a county of about 70,000 to now a county of about 225,000. And that all, most of that growth happened in about a 10-year window. So when Relevant was launched by our lead pastor is actually from a neighboring community, grew up here. I was his youth pastor. So that's kind of my connection to the area and to him. And when he came back here, approximately 87 or 89% of our community did not attend church on a regular basis. And about 72% actually had no affiliation or connection with any church. It wasn't like, oh yeah, I'm a member of such and such church. I mean, they had no connection at all.
Oh wow.
So in an area that is kind of, you know, the Bible Belt, the Deep South, you would assume there's kind of high church attendance, but really a lot of unchurched people. And Relevant really from the beginning has been about trying to become a church. And this term is not unique to us, but just to be a church that unchurched people would be drawn to and would love to attend. So it started in 2010. We just celebrated our 7-year anniversary. And I think that, you know, people that follow growing churches, you probably would see some of the same things there, just modern music, a setting and an atmosphere that doesn't feel like really a traditional church setting. Everything from just we moved into a brand new building about a year and a half ago. And we've had people come by the church and say, I just wanted to stop in here and see what this is. Some business was going up, you know.
What is this church? What is Relevant? Exactly. That doesn't look like a church.
And interestingly, the property we were on was when before the housing bubble burst and the economy kind of went south as far as that sort of thing goes. It was slated to have a supermarket put here and a shopping center. So a lot of people were expecting that. And then after the property sat dormant for years and then we bought it and started building, and it certainly didn't look like a conventional church structure. So you had a lot of people that just were wondering, well, what is this? And so at any rate, it's a if you were to come in Relevant, it's certainly not the conventional church atmosphere or culture that you would see. But one of the things that we regularly have people comment on, and it's really a value of ours, and it's exciting to hear the feedback because it feels like at least in one area we're doing something well, and that is just a real sense of authenticity and care among people. And, you know, I've learned a long time ago, you can be a very friendly church, but not necessarily be a relational or an authentic church. And not that we have it all figured out, but I do feel like when people come in here, they're going to come into a a booming, busy atmosphere, but they're going to feel like someone really cares that they're there. Mm-hmm. Someone takes some time to connect with them, help them find their way around. And then, you know, hopefully the systems we have take people from that front door experience and move them into the life of the church. So it's been pretty exciting. I've grown up in church, been in church all my life, and I feel like I've been a part of some great churches. Mm-hmm. But there's just something unique happening here that I've really never experienced, mm-hmm. and that's all, you know, a positive
thing. Yeah, it's very cool. One of the things I love, just to kind of underline something you said, was, you know, I think there can be, and this is not with, you know, a lot of church leaders, but there are some church leaders in what has traditionally been known as the Bible Belt that can be complacent with the fact that, you know, all you got to do is open your doors and people will show up. Well, that's just not the case anymore. That's just not true. You know, our churches are, our communities are more unchurched than they were 10 years ago. And we all need to step out of our comfort zone and say, man, how do we make this the kind of place that unchurched people would love to attend? And so I think Relevant, if you're looking for a great example of a church that's doing this, Relevant is one of those. And you know, is just a fantastic church. So you really, you know, should, like I say, check it out. Now, you know, as you've been growing over the years, one of the things we've talked about many times here at Unseminary is the need to attract and develop and then ultimately release leaders. Now, how have you been able to do that from like a volunteer perspective? Or has that just been really easy and like it's always been, you know, straightforward right from the start at your church?
Yeah, it's just been easy. We opened the doors and leaders just flooded in. It was pretty amazing.
You're the one church in the country.
Yeah. No, actually, if we could reschedule this for about 5 years from now, I'll try to answer the question.
Maybe right, help you out. Exactly.
Nice. So, you know, we as a new church, of course, when we started out, you know, you're just trying to reach people, period. And you know, we built a launch team and had core people in place, obviously, to try to get things up and running. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in those early days, and if anyone has ever been a part of a church start or a restart, or, you know, they're trying to build things from the ground up, you realize that there's those early days where it's like, oh, you're breathing? Yeah, you're a greeter now. Oh, you can, you know, you can shake someone's hand? Great, you're in charge of kids. You know what I mean?
It's like
you start in that place where you're just looking for warm bodies in a lot of sense. And obviously there's, you know, you don't just throw anybody in any place. But in the early years of Relevant, early few years, you know, it was just really about trying to mobilize and engage people in serving. And we found a lot of that happening. But as the church grew, you know, obviously the teams had to grow in terms of the number of people. When we added services, now you have multiple teams that are, you know, doing the same function. Mm-hmm. So now all of a sudden you can't have just one person in charge of all the teams or just, you know, one particular team. So leadership at those different levels is required. Well, like most church leaders, you know, we tend to default to, well, there's the most faithful person, or there's the person that seems to have a really good attitude. Let's ask them, or they're available. And every once in a while, you ask someone, and it's a home run. They have the giftings and the skill set and the availability to do it. Other times, you get people that they're willing, but they're just not very skilled at it, and they don't do a good job, and the team kind of suffers. Other times, you know, they're capable, but their heart's not in it. You know, so you get this mixed bag of people that are in functions of leadership, but are not necessarily gifted or at least trained in leadership. And, you know, you've heard Maxwell through the years, you know, the whole idea leaders are, what is it, developed, not born, or vice versa, something like that. Obviously, some people have the gift of leadership, but other people can actually learn and develop leadership skills.
Right.
Well, we began to realize that, you know, we had a leadership vacuum. And what was so interesting about this is our senior pastor is really a phenomenal leader. And I feel like he's done a great job of helping create a culture of leadership, but we didn't really have a good plan for multiplying leadership.
Oh, that's a good distinction there. Yeah, that's a really good distinction.
In retrospect, you know, I think back, that can be really deceiving because you feel like, oh, we've got a leadership culture, but okay, well, where's all the leaders now that are coming from? And so it's like, yeah, we're developing a small group of people, staff people, or, you know, high level people, or maybe we get lucky in a few cases and it kind of feels like, oh, look, we're all about leadership. And when we were, in the sense of where our hearts were, we didn't really realize we didn't have a plan for that. So that kind of led to some head scratching and soul searching. That was part of a bigger process. but ultimately led us last year to spend some really focused time over a period of months developing this with an outside consultant.
Yeah, let's I've seen this. I've seen this in our own church, and I've seen it in other churches where it seems like we have a lot of roles and a lot of areas where people can plug in that are euphemistically the like stand here and hand out this bulletin role, where it's like come and do this thing. And then it's like the only other roles are either that or like super high level leadership, like the elders board or overseers, or like, and really we don't, and then in between we might have staff, but we aren't actually developing volunteer leaders to actually take swaths of the ministry and lead it. Was that how you describe where you guys were at, or was it some kind of nuance of that? Was that kind of what it was looking like?
I think that's a pretty good description, because initially, you've got your basic teams of people, of course, right? And so when you're young and you just have a staff person that maybe has two or three teams, it's like, okay, each of those teams might have 3 to 5 to 10 people, and you can easily gather them on Sunday morning, go through their responsibilities, pat them on the back, give them high fives, send them out. Well, now all of a sudden, as the point leader of those areas, you're being pulled to other places, or now you have, instead of three teams, you've got six teams or seven teams. And so, yeah, we had, it was kind of either the all or nothing. Either you were kind of the high level leader, or you were on the team, basically, or you were just handed the team, but not, without really any coaching on how to do that. And I think that something that we've really had to think through here recently, and I'll talk about this in a little bit, but as we've developed this idea of a leadership pipeline for us, we've had to separate the position / title of leadership from the function of leadership. And so
that's good.
We had to back up and define, okay, what leadership levels in terms of actual function of leadership do we need? Now we'll create the positions and titles based on the levels of leadership that we need. And I think just, we tend to do the exact opposite. And part of it's because we've never really been taught. And part of it's because, oh, I've got team X, so therefore I guess I need a coordinator or a team leader or whatever terminology you use. And you just start creating these positions based on kind of what you need immediately. And that may or may not work okay at the time, but it doesn't scale and doesn't help you develop the function of leadership. It just helps you develop someone to do some particular task.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay, well, we're going to jump in, and I'd love to hear kind of the process that you've been through. We're going to step through what that looks like. I love this because we're capturing, really catching you at a place where, like you say, we joked about it earlier, it's not like, hey, it's all sorted out yet. It's in process, which I think is really healthy. I think sometimes, unfortunately, on stuff like podcasts, we always present cases of like, and then it just worked. And I love the fact that we're kind of in process here. So why don't we start with, where you were? You kind of mentioned it earlier. Over the last year, you've really worked on trying to clarify vision. Talk through that process a little bit.
Well, that's a really comprehensive thing that we somewhat stumbled on. I referenced in some feedback I gave you before a book that our pastor came across called God Dreams by Will Mancini. And it talks about developing what he refers to as your vision template. Mm-hmm. And without getting into all the details on that, I will say that some years ago, I had this nagging sense that as churches, we've got good at declaring a mission statement, and we've got good at, creating these core values, most of which, frankly, we copied from Willow Creek and Saddleback, they were right and they were good, and they apply and fit in many cases. But, we had these mission statements and core values and things, and there was something that was missing, and I just didn't know what it was. And I just felt like all these things sound right, but are we moving people toward them? And if so, how and why? And, when you repeat those things again, they sound like, well, this is the right thing we should do. And this is certainly biblical and it makes perfect sense practically, but why isn't it like engaging our people? Why isn't it touching their hearts? Why isn't it moving them toward something? And I started saying, I think there's strategy part that's missing. And so my mind kind of defaulted to the whole idea of strategic planning, and that's certainly important at a certain level. But what this process did for us was, and I feel like we, since the beginning, have been a good vision-centered church. You know, mm-hmm. Carl is great at casting vision and keeping people rallied around things. But what we began to ask ourselves is, are we, number one, are we articulating a vision that really is truly unique to what God has called us to do in this particular community? And it's going to be similar to a lot of churches, but it's also got to be very unique. And so not only were we asking that, but this book challenges to think there's got to be a clear and compelling picture of that vision that's painted, you know, for people, and not just the vision to say, hey, let's go take this hill, because that's where I think a lot of leaders throughout history have been good in a particular moment. You know, let's go attack this problem. Let's go conquer this hill. Let's go take this land. And that's good. But what are we going to do 5 and 10 and 20 years from now that God is positioning us now to be able to accomplish? So this helped us to think through, because we're a younger church, the way this process guided us was probably to think not farther beyond the horizon than what our history is. And so at the time, we were like 5.5 years old. So we were thinking, where do we want to be in 5 to 6 years from now? And we went through this process of crafting this, you know, over the horizon vision. Mm-hmm. And then that backed us into, okay, now what is it about? What do we do in the next 3 years to get us there? Mm-hmm. Then what do we do in the next year? And then over the next year, what do we do in 90-day increments to move us toward this grander vision? So that's an incredible process that we went through that was so collaborative for our team that helped us. But in that process, one of the things we identified under our 3-year window in order to achieve this big God-sized goal that or vision that God had given us, we said, you know, there's a vacuum of leadership to get there. And if we're going to multiply our influence both right where we are and then future campuses and or we use the term future expressions, because we don't know if every expression in the future of Relevant is going to be a physical campus. Is it going to be something virtual? Is it going to be something in a home? We don't really know. But, you know, how will we do? So we have to multiply leadership. Mm-hmm. And then that then became one of our year-long focus. In fact, it was our main year-long focus after we created this template. And so we contacted Will Mancini, the author of that book. His company, Oxano, among other things, helps churches develop a leadership development plan. And so we got together with about 4 other churches. A couple of them were church plants that we were sponsoring. Another was an established church that we helped to plant a few years back. And we went through about a year-long process of meeting several different times for an intensive, like, 2-day process of really figuring out what leadership do we need, how do we get there, find it, and then what's the process for moving people. And it was tedious at times, but now that we have a product that we're working to implement, it's like, wow, this has huge implications for the future of our church.
Well, this is great. Will Mancini is a friend of the show. He's been on past episodes. We've had a number. If you've listened in to every episode, we've had a number of churches actually really reference the good work that Oxano has done to really help them with breakthrough clarity. You know, this idea of, like, if we can really clarify exactly what it is that God's calling your church to, and then the genius thing about Will and his team really is then moving that from here's an idea to what, okay, where are we actually going with it? Let's take some, you know, next steps. Let's actually push through to that next level, not just have an interesting idea on the wall printed in, you know, our bulletins or in our programs, but really to actually make a difference. So,
well, you know, I think that's just to tag on what you said there. It's so huge, I think, for all of us as church leaders to think about is this idea of a very generic vision versus a very specific vision. Because, you know, all my life, I've heard great pastors and preachers and leaders say, you know, let's go win the lost. You know, let's go take our community. And again, that's right. That's ultimately what we're supposed to do as a church. Right. But it's so much that's so big. People can't wrap their minds and arms around that. But when you distill that vision down into something real clear. And now you can get down to the fact to say, okay, over the next 90 days, right, here's three things we're going to focus on really putting everyone's effort toward. Yeah. Now, all of a sudden, and we've looked back now that we've been through almost close to a year's worth of these 90-day processes, mm-hmm, we're like, wow, we've actually moved ourselves forward in right the last year in a very tangible way.
Well, let's talk about that. The thing I love, there's a great book out there called The 12-Week Year that does the same thing, is really focusing organizations on saying, how do we chunk down our work into a 90-day sprint that says, okay, these are the things we're going to work on, we're going to focus on. Why don't we talk that through? What were some of the things? How did you move from kind of, here's some great ideas to then, you know, this is what the last year has looked like. Here's how we've actually then moved our people and our staff, our volunteers towards, you know, kind of actualizing, working all that out in our community.
Well, let me give you three 90-day segments as okay it relates just to this leadership pipeline.
Yep.
Once we had been through the process and we distilled the first level of it for our own sake and put together kind of a roadmap, we said, okay, in this next 90 days, we as a staff are going to pretend like we're the potential leaders, and we're just going to go through this and give feedback and work through it. And it was about every 2 to 3 weeks that we went through a segment of it. And each week, a different staff member just pretended that they were the trainer and we were kind of the fresh potential leaders. And so we all went and just kind of did our homework and did what it said and came through and talked about it. So over 90 days, we went through it as a team, as if we were volunteers, and we tweaked it and massaged it and tried to make it, you know, more workable. So then the next 90 days, we said, okay, as staff members, we need to, we decided that, and I still think this is true, that the best group for us to take through, or the best grouping for us, is no more than about four trainers, trainees per one trainer. And that's because it's hard to have the conversations and give the input if you have more than that. And this right is a very relational, you know, process where they do homework, then you come back and debrief and wrestle with it. So anyway, we said, you need to identify 3 to 4 people at least that you're going to take through this in the next 90 days. Mm-hmm. And at least one of those needs to be a potential trainer who they can take the material afterwards and now come alongside you and help train others. So in that second 90-day window, we did that. And it was one of those things where we put a date on a calendar. We put a thing on our wall where we have our staff meetings. And we said, look, we're all in this. We're all going to
do this. Yep.
So we come back at the end of that, and now every staff member has taken a small handful of people through it. Yeah. We came together, we gave feedback, we said, hey, this worked, this didn't work, this, you know, was good feedback we got from the participants, and we kind of made some more tweaks. Now, actually, the Sunday following our conversation here, we are going to now take a larger group of potential leaders that have expressed interest in this and start to move them through it. Now, it's still going to be the individualized trainer, trainee, little cluster groups, but we're going to kick it off in a bigger setting just because we have a big handful of people. We're going to try to move through it at one time. And that was something kind of interesting on a side note, because our trainer from Oxano, he said that, you know, you may not necessarily want to try to go back and grandfather a whole bunch of people in. Think about the idea of training new people. And we started with that premise, but then we realized that while that's good and we want to keep doing that, frankly, because of where our church is and how it's developed, we had so many quote unquote leaders in positions that we said, if we don't get these people up to speed on these expectations and these competencies, then, you know, we're wasting our time trying to develop new ones, because now the old ones are not necessarily helping us move forward. So we're now in our third 90-day window on that leadership pipeline, and it's to get the next wave of people through that.
That's amazing. So, you know, the thing to highlight there, I think sometimes we can get intimidated with something like, we're launching a leadership development pipeline. It sounds like, oh my goodness, that's like very overwhelming. The thing I love that you've done is chunk it down into just very practical steps. We're going to push together. We're going to push for this 90 day. We're going to get it, keep it in front of people, say, well, you know, we're going to start kind of in concentric circles almost and, you know, see that ripple out. Now, what impact is that even in this, you know, these first three 90 day periods, what impact are you starting to see on your culture? How are you seeing things shift, even if it's early results, even if it's small kind of gains initially?
Well, I think two things, and I'm just speaking from my own personal experience as I've primarily been doing it with some small group leaders and people in that arena.
Yep.
I've seen the confidence level in those leaders raise. I've also seen, I think, the passion grow, because I was pleasantly surprised that how prepared these people were that when they came to the conversation about what we talked about. And I think part of that is we gave them something that was legitimate that says, hey, this is important, and therefore we want you to do these things, and let's come back and talk about what we're learning about it. And so there's an enthusiasm that has increased. But I also look, not every area of ministry yet has a person that we've said, yeah, they're ready to go train people, but several people have. And now all of a sudden, it's kind of like we're looking in our areas and saying, people that, you know, we thought had potential or were kind of helping us a certain way, now they're legitimately going to take chunks of leadership.
That's great.
And it really is phenomenal. One quick thought back to what you said about, you know, the concentric circles and how prior to that, it can sound so big, but the 90 days helps you chunk it down. I remember about 3 years ago, I stumbled on a church in the North Carolina area that I was looking at some stuff for our discipleship kind of growth track stuff, and they had some good material. But I read an article, I think, in Leadership about their leadership development. And I dug into that a little bit and found out what they were doing. And I went back to Carl and I said, you know, we're getting underway as it relates to some initial discipleship, but I wonder if our next step is developing leaders. And we both thought, yeah, that probably is. But because of where we were in our growth and what other needs we had, as well as just how big that sounded leadership, it was kind of like, yes, let's do it. Let's come back and visit that. Let's think about that. And then, you know, all of a sudden we're doing many other things over a couple of years. Finally, as we started this process, we came back to this several months ago. We're like, this is what we thought we should have done.
Right. Yeah.
And it was the right thing. And for us, it was the wrong timing, and we didn't have the plan to make it happen. But now we had a plan and it's like, okay, this is doable.
That's a key insight there that, you know, they're, you know, and I've seen that as I've coached churches that are going multi-site or are looking to kind of get over the 1,000 hump. You know, it's like we have the right intention, and we might even know, like, we have a kind of vague sense of what we need to do, but actually having this is the process, or here is a, you know, is a, let's figure out a process, or let's learn from others that have kind of walked through, really can make all the difference. Well, when you look kind of over the horizon a little bit, what are the next kind of the next step of your process look like as we kind of help people understand this, you know, this puzzle?
Well, for us, if you go to our over the horizon vision that we've articulated in a very, very specific way, there was a part of our vision clarification process where we were trying to decide, or not decide, but answer the question, like, what are problems that exist now that we can and should address and meet? And we were, you know, we were putting things out there that you could probably say is true of almost any community, you know, just basic problems people. And it was kind of generic, what I would call Sunday school answers that we were all up with. And it was mainly because we weren't 100% sure even where that question was going. Well, Julie, who is our pastor's wife, she was kind of struggling. She was writing some things down. And just before we shared it as a group, she had to step out of the room for a moment. And so we begun to share. And when she left, she's like, I don't know, guys, I got nothing here, you know. And so when we went to share, she was out of the room, and Carl said, just grab her paper, see what's on it. And she wrote, she had a phrase that she wrote down that when it was said in the room, I mean, literally, it was like a God moment, and this holy
light bulbs went on. People were like,
oh my God. Man. And what all she wrote down, and she didn't even realize even what she was saying at the time, she wrote down, we're facing a crisis of brokenness.
Interesting.
And, you know, that may or may not resonate with every single person.
Yeah.
Us in our context, man, that was like a 1,000-pound weight just fell on everybody. And we realized that, you know, all of the things that we complain about or we feel like are deficient or that we get frustrated with people about, it comes down to the fact that we're reaching a culture of just absolutely broken people in so many different ways. And so that has become this underlying driver for us. So in that, to answer your question, what do we see over the horizon? Right now, there's two specific things that are that we're really focusing on. One is addressing this crisis of brokenness from a discipleship standpoint, but we realize that that might also have to start with a recovery type effort. And you think about specific things like, you know, the broken families. We found that in our community, and this number may not sound huge, but in certain contexts, but there's about 215 or 20 foster kids that need to be placed in our county alone.
Oh, wow.
Guess how many families there are available to take foster kids in our county?
Not enough.
15.
Yeah.
And there's over 200 kids. So we thought, you know, part of the brokenness is, you know, kids that, you know, that's kind of the modern day orphans, right?
Right.
And one of the things that has become a real driving part of our vision is we want to raise kids that never know a day without knowing Jesus. Well, that sounds great, right? And everyone's, oh, it just sounds so spiritual and how wonderful we are. We're going to raise kids. Okay, so how are we going to do that? Okay, if a kid is in a church home, great, let's support and equip them. But what about the orphans that have no home?
Right.
What about the kid who's in a home that gets beat every night? What about the kid who comes home on the weekends and has no food all weekend that we can give food to? And use those things as a bridge to share Jesus, but in a broader sense to address this crisis of broken. So we're looking for what are the steps and the things we're doing to address that. And we see that too in the disciple making process, because, you know, right now our assimilation / first step discipleship process is like many other churches. It's kind of, you know, what do we value? Where do you plug in? What are your expectations, your spiritual gifts, all that kind of stuff. But we get people that go through that and they're like, rah, rah, yeah, let's go. I'm all in this thing. But guess what? They wake up on Monday morning and they're still, they live like they're still far from God because they don't know any different.
Right.
So how do we actually help mend the broken pieces, shape people's lives in such a way? So the second focus of us right now, we just announced it. In fact, the Sunday following our conversation here, we're taking our 2-year financial intentions for our next year vision, which includes the expansion of our campus in order to be able to reach farther areas, in order to give more quality attention to our children's ministry and things like that. So those are a couple things over the horizon. Addressing this crisis of brokenness from a healing, discipling standpoint, and then creating the facilities and the resources to take that beyond our walls.
Oh, very cool. I love that. And I think I love as you're really making practical the outworking of the gospel. How does that actually work out in your community beyond just kind of platitudes, which I just think is, you know, so many of our churches, we can learn from that.
This is the Unseminary Podcast. Stuff you wish they taught in seminary.
Well, we're going to jump into the lightning round, that part of the episode where we ask similar questions of everybody that's on the show. I'm super excited to have Pastor Mark today from Relevant Church, fantastic church. You should be checking out and tracking along and watching, you know, what God's doing there as they continue to impact their part of the world and beyond. Mark, what is an online resource that you're using these days that's helping you in your ministry?
About a year or so ago, our staff started using Slack, S-L-A-C-K. Some may be familiar with that, slack.com. And, you know, in this day and age where some people email, some people text, some people, you know, iMessage, some people want to call, there's all these different modes of communication. We figured we need something that is quick and easy for everyone to be able to use.
Right.
It's available on mobile platforms, but it's also not obtrusive in that, you know, you don't have to have it buzz you every single time a message comes in, or, you know, you can set some parameters there. But that's been very helpful. Also, because within Slack, it's kind of a sort of an instant messaging program to mm-hmm. a degree, mm-hmm. But it allows you to create these threads for each unique and discrete conversation. So rather than, because it used to be, like maybe two or three of us would start texting about something related to next Sunday. Mm-hmm. Well, all of a sudden, someone throws in a question about fantasy football, and then someone throws in a question about, let's get together and barbecue next week. And all right. of a sudden, what was a ministry conversation gets lost and convoluted. And so right. now we can create conversations around certain initiatives or, yep. or staff related things. And that's been very helpful.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great tool for sure. You should check it out. What's a book you've read in the last, I don't know, maybe 6 months to a year that's shaping your thinking and ministry?
Well, I referenced it already. Mm-hmm. It's that book by Will Mancini, God Dreams, and mm-hmm. kind of really distilling that vision template. And I would highly recommend that for pastoral leaders. Even if you think, man, I've got a vision for my church, you might be farther beyond where they prescribe and help in that book. But I would venture to say a lot of church leaders will read that and be challenged, inspired, and also then see a real practical plan of, mm-hmm. okay, now I can take my team through a collaborative process that is a little bit beyond the, you know, pastor who comes down from the mountain with the greatest vision and wants everyone just to jump around it, you know. So that's been very good. Another just a simple little book, and I just started reading it. Mm-hmm. It's a new one by Chris Tomlin. I think it's called Holy Roar. Phrases from the Old Testament about worship, and in this leadership, fast-paced, go do something kind of an age, I think it's important that we also sometimes just stop and think about the God we're serving and why we serve him, and sometimes just shut it all out and focus on him. And that's going to sustain us long term. So a simple little book I would highly recommend.
That's very cool. What's another ministry you're looking at these days that inspires you?
You know, when you originally asked me that question, I couldn't help but think about all the churches that probably every person listening to this already follows. And
all the brand name churches.
Exactly. You know, one church that's on the north side of Atlanta, yep. probably an hour and 15 minutes or so from where we are, yep. Is called Freedom Church in Acworth, Georgia. Mm-hmm. Freedom is a little farther along in their development than we are. Mm-hmm. And so they have been a good resource for us to just learn some things that they've done that have helped them to pass through the barriers that we're facing. And so great church, Freedom Church, Acworth, Georgia, Pastor J.R. Lee. Check them out, contact them, follow them. Good stuff there.
Very cool. If you could get 15 minutes with any leader alive, who would you want to get that with and why?
Well, does that include you?
Well, we got more than 15 minutes, so.
Well, hey, my dreams have come true.
Oh, gosh. Right. Now I got to send you money. You start saying stuff like that, you know.
Someone who popped into my mind, I'm a huge sports fan.
Oh, nice.
And On the baseball side of things, I'm a huge St. Louis Cardinals fan, have been for years. Their manager for, I think, the last 10 years or so, who's also a Christ follower, Mike Matheny.
Okay.
And, he leads an organization that, you know, is expected to be in the playoffs and, you know, spends a lot of effort to get high-quality players. And so it would be incredible to sit down with someone who has to manage not only personalities, but actual performance expectations among people who have strong personalities and wants and likes and dislikes. And then how do you not only manage those things, but how do you do it in the spotlight of hundreds of thousands of people expecting you to get it right,
right.
all of the time?
Yes.
You know, and I think that would be an interesting conversation. And Mike is not a loud, outgoing, kind of in-your-face type guy, too.
Right.
You know, so it's like, how do you quietly provide the strength of leadership you have for these many seasons, you know, as a manager? That would, I think, be a fascinating conversation. And how do you let your faith inform that, too, you know?
So were you from St. Louis? How did you get connected with St. Louis? That seems like, an interesting lifelong connection, you said.
Well, let me just say this, because I'll hopefully try to head off any chiding or people less than my chops as well. I grew up in southern Mississippi on the Gulf Coast, so
okay.
we did not specifically have a hometown professional sports team. The nearest was about an hour away, the New Orleans Saints.
Yep.
Well, St. Louis was just a team that as a youngster I became familiar with, started following, which they were winning a lot of World Series back then. So just kind of a natural team to like. I also got exposed through a business relationship my parents had with the Dallas Cowboys as a young child. And so I am a lifelong Dallas Cowboys fan. I bleed blue and silver, and I will fight you if you have anything negative to say about the Cowboys. So anyway, because I didn't really grow up in a specific sports town, I kind of feel like I have the freedom to choose which teams I want to follow. And St. Louis happens to be the baseball team.
That's great. That's so fun. That's cool. Good. Well, I know being executive pastor at a growing church like yours can take a lot out of you. It's a lot of effort and energy, but just when you want to kick back, relax, have some fun, what is it that you do?
Oh, two things that I do primarily. One is I just enjoy going to the gym to work out. It's just a good outlet. And it's a good, just kind of the old change of pace, change of place type thing. A lot of people I hear say, man, I wish I could get, you know, a home gym and put it in my home. And for me, it's like, I as much as I love my home, I just want to get out and go somewhere for a little bit and exercise and work out. So I enjoy that. And I also, for the last, I guess, 9 or 10 years, I'm also a baseball umpire.
Oh, nice.
Umpire college and high school baseball, as well as these national tournaments that showcase professional prospects. And so that's a whole lot of fun.
That is cool. Nice. And that nobody seems to like the ump, though. That's the problem with the ump, you know.
Yeah, I know. It kind of comes with the territory. But
being a pastor, you know, there's some connection to that, too.
Yeah, sure.
That's great. Well, Mark, I really appreciate being on the show today. You know, thanks so much for being here. If people want to get in touch with you or with the church, what's the best way they can do that?
They can hit me up anytime at Mark, M-A-R-K, at GoRelevant.com, GoRelevant.com, Mark at GoRelevant. Or look at our website, GoRelevant.com. Easy way to get in touch with me that way. I'd love to chat.
Great. Thanks so much for being on the show today, Mark.
Absolutely. Thanks, Rich.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.